Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, we are joined by Craig Hill. Craig has been an expert in the hard money loan business for many years. He joined the Norris Group really when we began the company in 1996, now going on 18 years. And Craig, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You remember when you came over, we thought that we would need X amount of dollars of money base to do a hard money loan business. And at last check, it was something over $70 million.
Yeah, it was, and that certainly was no wasn't anywhere near the number we were thinking. That's for sure.
No, we didn't. We actually didn't have five digits attached to what we thought would work.
Right, right.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that? That's a lot of trust. And what we've noticed is that trust comes slowly with the right people.
Yeah, it is really a process, and it's almost hard to explain. But I put it this way, you know, you don't, at least from my perspective, like it's kind of you gradually. You don't really sell the trust deeds. You kind of let that sell themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I've really found over the years, you got to listen to the people, and they kind of give you an idea, like, okay, this is probably what they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really made it a point, if we don't have anything that I think would fit their interest level at that time, well, then unfortunately, you know, maybe we can't start with them there, because I've always avoided trying to show them something that they've hinted or already let it be known that's not what they're looking for.
Okay. You know, I remember there was a gentleman that I knew, and he asked what our trustees paid, and I said 12%. He says, I can get 16% with, using my money directly. And I said, really? I said, and what kind of trustee is that? He says, well, it's a second. And, I said, okay. And what percentage of your money is active? And he said, well, maybe 20% of it.
Right.
And I really thought that's an interesting way to look at yield. So I get 16% on my investments, but 80% of it is doing nothing while I wait for activity.
Yeah, and I've always had my thought on yield has always been I would like to know how much I made at the end of the year in terms of a real dollar figure.
Well, and it's also, okay, let's say you could find somebody that wanted the money bad enough to pay 16%. We both know that if you made five of those loans, you'd have a problem somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. You're only gonna get the 16% as long as they're paying you, and obviously, if they're gonna pay 16%, they've been everywhere else.
Exactly. So that's you didn't get a client. A loan found you.
yeah. That's exactly the truth. In other words, that person's probably been trying to sell that loan for who knows how long, and then somebody comes along and is strictly looking at the yield, and they're really not looking at what they're getting for that yield.
You know, another fascinating thing where I don't think this would happen if you had the wrong type of clientele investing in trust deeds. But for instance, the stock market had really a banner year last year, and I don't recall we losing any dollars to that world. No one pulled up stakes and said, "Well, I'm gonna go back to stocks."
Yeah, we're very fortunate with the clientele that we've cobbled out, and it's almost unfortunate because we actually have more people calling at times than we can actually accommodate, but they get very comfortable with the yields and the simplicity of it and the consistency of it. And over the years, I mean, there's some people, that have been with us a full 17 years, and a few even predate that before we started together. So they get a track record, and they get very comfortable with it. And I think it's another thing, just the nature of the investment. I mean, even myself, I'm not really that familiar with stocks. But I think almost anybody can understand there's a house and there's going to be a first mortgage on it, and they're going to be making payments to me. So I think the concept, once people get used to it, it really is a concept that everybody or most people are aware of, because if people have bought a house or done that before, it's really the same concept, and they feel like, well, I have the security of the house, they're making payments to me, so it really has a lot of common sense to it to most people.
Yeah, and like you said, familiarity. They've been on the other side of that. They've borrowed loans, made payments. Now you're on the flip side of that. Someone's making a payment to you.
Right, exactly.
And so you can it's just so simple. You can go visit the asset, which oddly enough, after let's say we fund 30 loans this month, how many of those homes will have been seen by the trustee investor?
I would be surprised if it's even one or two.
Okay, me too.
A lot of times that would probably be zero out of 30.
So there's a process of trust, and that's kind of what I alluded to in the beginning, to where somebody gets introduced to us, and it's very often by referral, word of mouth. And so you really encourage them to put a toe in the water before going all in, which is smart.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not a lot of times, but, you know, somebody might say, you know, I have a million to invest or whatever the number may be. So inevitably, I mean, I always say, well, let's, you know, in a case like that, you know, a typical loan size for a rehab and flip might be 200,000 now. I say, well, let's do one trust deed for 200,000, you know, get familiar with the process, you know, see how you like it, see how it works. And, you know, go from there. Because I think just the trust aspect, that goes hand in hand with performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try to talk to the people, and I kind of know if we could take a snapshot, they're thinking about doing it right now, then after year one, if they could see how it went and how simple it was and how smooth it was, that's where you really begin to develop the trust, is just by the performance, kind of things happening the way they happen. And then just kind of backing up a bit, because I, you know, if people might be interested in this, I do want to make a point. Even though most people, very few, if any, go out and look at the properties anymore, it's always part of our process that I will send them a copy of the appraisal, you know, prior to the, you know, in other words, as a first step in the deal.
Right. And since you landed on that space, our appraiser one of the best referral letters or whatever was our appraiser coming and saying, I've done 13,000 plus appraisals in my life, and the Norris Group is the only company that has never tried to dictate value.
Right. And, you know, when people know that that's how you're doing business, I mean, it really does. And we're fortunate. I mean, we've been doing this for 17 years. So I do have to admit that trust aspect, you know, at this point, although it's been very hard earned, is certainly easier for us than, say, somebody that's only been doing it for a year. Because you just have a 17-year history of kind of doing all of these, the same thing over and over again, and the process the same way, and just with word of mouth and referrals, it really does has built up a tremendous amount of trust.
And you know, when you have an appraiser, it doesn't hurt that they've had experience buying hundreds of homes themselves.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the keys, because anytime, you know, you're doing this business, you're always relying on certain, you know, third parties. And to be able to have an appraiser as we do, and we do have, you know, appraisers in various areas, whether it be San Diego, the desert, you know, et cetera, but they're all experienced, and most of them buy houses themselves and do the business. And as you mentioned, the one that does the most business for us, I mean, he's as experienced as you can get in the aspect of property buying. And that only further helps our case, because he can look at a house and he can help us identify a mistake. So, you know, there'll be times when I'll get an email from the appraiser saying, hey, listen, there's this deal. I just, you know, he'll say why he doesn't like it. And as both you and I know, I'll just kind of say, hey, listen, here's the email I got. I just don't think we should do it. So it doesn't mean that we're right 100% of the time, but we're always trying to take the extra step to make sure that we're just not missing anything that should be obvious to us.
What's harder to come by, $1 million borrower or $1 million investor potential and trustees? I don't mean one loan. I'm talking about, in other words, it seems like it's harder to get the money to trust you in putting it in trustees than it is for somebody to borrow it.
Yeah. And that aspect does come slowly. But on the other hand, the way we've whittled it down, to get, say, a good 200 grand loan, that has such a value that it almost attracts that other part, if you will.
Right.
In other words, because there's a lot of 200 grand loans, but there's not a lot of, say, 200 grand Norris Group loans.
Okay.
And once again, I do have to preface this by, you know, we've been doing this for so long that the reputation is there. But once, you know, you have all that in place, the history and everything else, when you have that $200,000 loan, you probably, you know, have 20 people that would take it at any given time.
Right.
Just because of the value that they know that has because of the track record.
And I think what you're saying is there's a filter in place, and that kind of leads to another topic is there's a lot of people that get approached by borrowers directly to fund their deals.
Right.
And talk about why that's why that has its challenges.
Yeah, I mean, the thing when you're dealing, if you're trying to go direct with an investor, from which side, the money side or the borrower?
Yeah, somebody approaching I'm the person that invests in money in trustees, and people that are wanting to borrow or trying to come directly, you know, why would somebody do that? And especially in light that in our world, a broker doesn't cost the person with money a dime.
Exactly, and actually, you know, you can actually, you know, in terms of the flip program, you can actually charge more going through a brokery because of the usury laws.
Exactly.
And once again, as you mentioned before, you have like so many people looking at the transaction when you're going through a broker, at least the way we go, as you say, filter it. When you're dealing directly with somebody, most people that have $1 million to invest, I don't think they have like the 17-year, with all of us, much longer, but the years of experience that we have looking at that and or the time to do that, because, see, that's all that we do, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's all we're doing. So even if, say, they thought somehow they could make a little bit more, my concern would always be, well, you know, is that risk worth an extra 0.5% or whatever they might be able to get if they were trying to do it direct? So it's generally not a good good situation. And unfortunately, the biggest example of that is when we started to slow down in, 06, 07, because we kind of knew what was happening.
Right.
There were a lot of investors that were in that situation that we talked about earlier where they were on automatic pilot with us.
Correct.
And unfortunately, when they decided that, well, geez, instead of just not making anything on my money, unfortunately, say they went elsewhere with other scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they had got in the habit of not really looking at what they were, it was more or less just to write the check scenario. And unfortunately, that really worked out, really was bad for a lot of investors that, you know, just tried to keep money working and not really know what they were lending on.
Right. They really thought all hard money loan companies were equal and all loans were equal.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess that also brings up all product types are equal.
Right.
Or all loan positions are equal. You know, that's the thing about having experience over a course of almost two decades where you go through the things and we've had very few problems. But when we do have one, we analyze it and then we find out, okay, that's a repetitive problem, so we're not going to put anything in a second position, or we're not going to loan on that product type because it's inherently where the problems are and where they get worse if things get bad.
Exactly, and we had an example of that, and it didn't turn out really that bad. We had an idea, boy, this probably goes back, 12 or 15 years, but for a couple of good clients, we thought, well, and back to the money issue, we'll do some seconds for them.
Right.
And we did that with a lot of, company and personal money. And that way they can maybe do a little bit more, kind of just help them leverage a little bit. And that turned out, it didn't turn out bad, but it just allowed them maybe to do a little too much.
That's right.
Than they should have been doing. And so that's a practice that we're not doing. And another question every once in a while that comes up is they ask us, well, can we just either, make payments at the end or just include them in the deal? And very rarely, if at all, do we like to do that. And one reason is I think if somebody's making a $2,000 a month payment on something, they realize that they have a debt there.
That's right.
And it means that they're not going to do 5 loans and have $10,000 a month going out unless they're more than well equipped to handle that $10,000 a month payment.
And that kind of brings back to, we talked in the first segment with sometimes the surprise nature of the business. When we started doing hard money loans at the Norris Group, I was probably the main borrower for years.
Right.
And I remember having 24 hard money loans and 24 payments.
Right.
And you're supposed to have 5 closings and you'd have 1. And you really put the kibosh on the buying side. In other words, if I'm buying something, it's going to be such a killer deal that it's a no-brainer because you really realized, okay, there's a point at which one more isn't so hot.
Right. It almost gets to a point if people start to borrow that much where every time you make your monthly payments, you're losing the profit on one deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been a big fan of say instead of doing 40 deals, do the 20 best.
Yeah, and that's I think that's where the monthly payment finally makes you humble and go, okay, well, I'm going to say no to that.
Right.
It's a little bit like being a contractor where you want to get busy and you get busy on marginal margins. And then all of a sudden you say, well, okay, now I'm going to stretch my margins. Unfortunately, a lot of times you get that job too.
Right, exactly.
That's the house buying business.
Exactly.
We deal with both sides of this. We deal with the borrower and we deal with the investor that wants a trustee type investment. How are they different in makeup? What are each of them chasing and why is it a good fit for each of them to do what they do?
Yeah, I think passive versus aggressive would probably be the first thing that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. The borrowers, they're probably a little more, personality-wise, they're a little more aggressive. Most of them that come through, they're going to be a little bit on the younger side probably. They're going to be more doing the business to try to, say, accumulate wealth or, build a portfolio type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the investor, most of them, they've kind of already made their money, whether it be over years of saving, retirement accounts, selling businesses, what have you. So they're looking for a little bit more passive situation where they just kind of want a monthly income coming in. They don't really want to be too involved with the process. A lot of times it doesn't work out, in all honesty. If somebody on the investor side, has a little bit more of that aggressive where they want to control everything because it's just not a good fit, then maybe they should be out doing
mm-hmm.
something else. So most of our investors on the other side, they appreciate the passive nature. And it doesn't mean that, like, they're not involved at all, but just, over time, they get very comfortable with just receiving checks. And it isn't a job anymore. For most of these people, they don't really, they either currently have a job or they've retired from a job or something like that. So they don't really want another job. They just want to earn a good rate of return on what they've been able to accumulate. On the other side, it's completely opposite of that. They are trying to, be totally involved, you know, create wealth and go from there.
And what's interesting, you can have a transition occur just with the same person, and that would, you know, really be me personally.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, go from aggressive phase of my life to now a more passive phase of my life. And in the aggressive phase, you're spending an enormous amount of your time. Even though the yield is greater, you do have a job. When you get to the passive stage, your money is busy and you're not.
Exactly. And I think one thing that people, jumping back to the other side, the borrowers or the clients that are doing the buying and flipping, let's say, sometimes they don't see the value of what we do when we have investors that lend money, et cetera. They try to find that piece for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that it can't be done, but essentially what they've done now is they've created another job for themselves. And that job gets in the way of what should be their primary job, and that is finding properties.
I think years ago when we first met, that is something that I never bothered with. I really realized that it was sort of like I had just struck the pot of gold. I had access to virtually unlimited funds that I didn't have to spend my time chasing.
Oh, absolutely. And that scenario works for a lot of people. And generally, maybe not surprisingly, but it seems like the most experienced people seem to realize that right away.
Yeah,
they've been through the whole scenario and they realize, boy, there's a cost involved here. But if I don't have to think about, you know, there's maybe three pieces of the puzzle. You find the house, you know, you finance the house, you fix it up and sell it. Well, if a third of the puzzle is on automatic pilot, that sure gives you a lot more time to do the other two pieces.
Yeah, I remember the good old days where I'd attend a HUD auction, and Monday, you know, you'd get faxed over six deals. That was a lot of fun for both of us.
Yeah, that really – well, it changed for both of us. I mean, at that point, I just started looking for people like yourself, you know, and then obviously a few years later, we ended up with the start of this, which has been so great, but – It just really is a concept. And I think what's interesting, and I think it's probably surprised both of us over the years, is especially early on, I think we were always wondering what would happen next.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, we can both attest to the fact that there has really never been a time when hard money hasn't made sense for a large portion of people. And maybe we can take out, obviously, you know, when you had the crash that we did, that was the time not to be lending. But with the exception of that, the entire 17 years, whether it's been on the way up, when it's flat, there's always been a niche for hard money, and it just seems like it'll continue to be that way.
Yeah, I remember, especially in the first few years that the Norris Group existed and did loans, you know, we were just in a kind of a growing cycle coming out of the REO boom of the early 90s.
Right.
And as those dissipated, I remember thinking, okay, well, I don't know how we're going to find product to lend on. And that it never, remember, I was trying to create maybe different programs that we just never needed to implement because the product that we wanted to loan on, the single family house, kept on showing up in quantity sufficient to not only sustain us but grow.
Yeah, and I think that's always been with our business model. If you're trying to do not all the loans, but you're trying to deal with the best clients, they will find a way to buy.
Yeah.
And that's what's probably been the key to our success is really having really great clients throughout the 17 years that can always seem to buy properties. And conversely, we have a large investor base now on the money side that understands what we do and it has been very accommodating to us. So much so that, you know, you mentioned the funds that we have now. That was almost, you know, another 60% higher than when we started the year. So the investor base really stepped up.
And, Craig, we're out of time.
Oh, very good.
I should have said that earlier.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us as always, and we'll see you guys all later.
Okay, Bruce.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.